got to find us, go online.
Okay. It's from Kedoshim. Tell us a lot about the comparison between Purim and Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippurim, who is a famous statement of the Ariya Kodosh, again, very obviously hard for us to understand in any degree of that it relates to us, but there is some kind of a connection somewhere on the Olam HaSayon between Purim and Yom Kippur. So I thought we would take it down a little bit to the Olam HaTachton a little bit, just understand a little bit in terms of Lamdas, a little bit in terms of Halacha, a little bit in terms of Machshava, and a little bit in terms of maybe some degree of as little into the Olam HaSayon as we could possibly get a glimpse into one Purim. So we'll try to get a sense of it. Try to get a little bit of a better understanding of this sugya. So we'll start with some Lamda Shashayla, and then we'll try to move into some other areas, but all related to this common theme. So what inspired me to speak about this morning was the shayla that somebody asked me, a fascinating shayla about Sudas Purim. After many Purims, you kind of think you heard them all already, and now a new one. So I have to thank one of my nephews for the shayla, and he had a whole series of questions from his school to ask the rabbi, stump the rabbi on shaylas and Ilchus Purim, strange shaylas and Ilchus Purim. So I'm not saying the shayla should be the maisa, we hope everyone should feel good today, but the shaylas was as follows. If a person sits down to eat the Sudas Purim, and they eat the Suda, and then, I don't want to say it while we're eating, but you understand, it's the benafichuf, means it comes good, but it gets the person throws up. So now the shaylas is, are they obligated to eat another, so assuming they're feeling well enough later in the day, are they obligated to eat another Sudas Purim? Or the yaitzei, the mitzvah Sudas Purim, even though the food didn't really make it down too far. What's the halacha? So I got so excited about the shayla, because the real one was the shayla. This is a sugya in the seventh parak of Masechet Chulin, not that long ago, Daf Yomi. The Gemara quotes the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. How do you define achila in kola Torah kula? The Torah gives us dinim of achila, vis-a-vis mitzvahs, vis-a-vis yisurim. So what exactly is the point of time that something is considered to be eaten? Because that's the mitzvah sayom today, eating. So what's considered to be eating? So Rabbi Yochanan says, it's called hanoz garon. Once the food goes down the throat, that's considered to be already a ma'aseh achila. Even though the food is subsequently thrown up, that's lamal, it doesn't make any difference. That would still constitute achila, bein legabi mitzvahs, bein legabi yisurim. The Shlokish disagrees. The Shlokish says, "Hanos me'ayim." You have to have the enjoyment, you have to have the pleasure of the lack of a better halach term, the kishkas, and go down into the me'ayim. Now, what exactly goron means, what exactly me'ayim means in terms of biologically, what's considered to be the halachli, the beginning of the goron, what's considered to be the halachli, the beginning of the me'ayim. I guess Dr. Fish will have to defer to your expertise in terms of, we'll spare you the drawing us a map about the GI tract. But somewhere in between, as a machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish, what exactly is the mark of demarcation? Those of you remember, we had a famous shayla about this back in my days, back in Kiryat Yavne, where somebody came walking into the Mishmeresh, white-faced, and it was late at night, and they came to ask me the following shayla. They had walked into the room, it was dark, and they were such a nice guy, they didn't want to wake up their roommate, and there was some cake, some Entenmann's cake or something sitting on the table, and they started to eat it in the dark, and as they were eating it, it didn't taste right. They took it outside, looked in the light, and it was this was not a microscopic bug under a little piece of broccoli or something. It was moly v'godesh l'choladeus. This was shratzim l'choladeus. So I'm not saying that wasn't shratzim l'choladeus, but this is shratzim l'choladeus. So they wanted to know whether they're obligated to throw it up or not. Are they mechuv to make themselves throw up because they just eat dreifus? So I said, well, that's an exciting shot. And according to Mishlokish, maybe you mechuv to try to throw up to get rid of the mechol sasurus that came down, because before you violate the yisar, you can get rid of it. According to Yachin, you don't have to, because if you already violated the yisar, you don't gain much by throwing it up. So Baruch Hashem for this fellow, we pass like Rabbi Yachin. So the pasuk say, not mechuv to throw it up. Good. Okay, good. So now the shadow becomes back to Sudas Purim. Would a person be yotze in the midst of Sudas Purim if he ate it and then immediately went came back up again? So l'chora, it should depend on the machlokes of Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish. According to Rabbi Shlokish, he wouldn't be yotze. He didn't do an achila yet. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, presumably he would be yotze. That was my initial reaction. Then I started to think a little bit, and I reminded myself of a minchas chinuch of all places in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim. There is a minchas chinuch in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim that is a chiddush within the machlokes of Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish. That's a minchas chinuch, b'medu ha-mamurim, that Rabbi Yochanan had a machlokes. That's when the halach is formulated in terms of achila. There's a mitzvah achilas shrotzim, the isra achilas shrotzim, there's a mitzvah achilas matzah, the achilas karam pesach, there's a mitzvah achilas. But sometimes the Torah tells us that you have to eat something But it's not really eating. Eating is almost like a vehicle, almost like a mechanism to reach a certain later point, which is not achila per se. And one good example of that is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, the Torah never even says achila. The Torah says inui. It happens to be the Torah Shabbat, Loch Mashtinai tells us that the way to violate the Isra of inui and Yom Kippur is to eat it. But the Torah doesn't formulate it in terms of achila per se. That's exactly the reason why the Gemara says the shear is different. The shear is not even a kezias when it comes to Yom Kippur. The shear is kesevis, a gasa, a large date, because just having a kezias constitutes a ma'is achila, but doesn't constitute a guilty inui, doesn't constitute a negating of the inui. So when it comes to Yom Kippur, argues the Mechatz Chinuch, maybe the Mechatz Chinuch is not relevant. You can't discuss about a ma'is achila. You have to ask yourself, did this person experience a lack of inui or not? So says the Mechatz Chinuch that l'chora, the perkos body didn't have hadas mehayim, it went down for a second, then came right back up again. So achila he did, but built the inu he didn't accomplish, and therefore he probably wouldn't be oiver the iser on Yom Kippur. So we come out an interesting chiddush going to Mechatz Chinuch. A person ate by mistake on Yom Kippur, they chop right away, so they have something to gain by throwing it up. So the Yosemech disagrees with that Mechatz Chinuch. Yosemech is l'hoyot v'me'elam. We don't have any mocker in Shas, he has a right against the Mechatz Chinuch, back and forth the pilpul. Then the Mechatz Chinuch goes on and says, according to his yisod, it's not only true when it comes to Yom Kippur. There are other mitzvahs in the Torah that also achila is not the end of the game. Let's say l'moshe b'chas ha-mazon. So b'chas ha-mazon, it says v'chalta v'savata. So in order to be chayav min ha-Torah and benchi, according to most Rishonim, you require sevia. You have to be mamash full. So it says b'chas chinuch, to be chayav min ha-Torah and benchi, if a person eats and then throws up, well, ma'isa, he's not sevia. So he didn't reach the point of sevia. He may have done a ma'isa achila, but he didn't reach the point of sevia. So whenever there's an additional component necessary in the halacha, then you have to be done whether that component has been fulfilled with a ma'is achil alone, whether it requires something higher level. Then Mechatz Chinuch backtracks and he says that maybe at a level of the araisa, if you ate and threw up, so you wouldn't have to bench, but with the rabban you have to bench. Why? Because Chazal instituted that even if you eat a kezayis, you have to bench. So the nature of the takanas chachamim was that although min haTorah you need a sviya, with the rabban and achil enough, achil is sufficient to be mechayiv in benching with the rabban. So he has a shtickle Torah that midaraisa if you eat and throw up, you don't have to bench. But midarabon is left to bench. Other folks would say you don't have to bench at all because it's like this achel b'meyot. The Gemara says that whatever person eats and then 2 hours later he's hungry again. It means the food is complete, it's been digested already. So the Gemara says that you don't have to, Mishnah says you don't have to bench anymore. So some achronim write, throwing it up is no worse than the achel b'meyot. It's achel chutz l'meyot. It means it didn't make it into the me'ayim. So it's even worse. Maybe you wouldn't be chayav to bench, not minatar, not midirabon. So interesting idea that Mechatz Chinuch is mechadesh that achila doesn't always depend on achila, depending on what the nature of it is.
If one would take an IV, would one be chayav to bench?
Oh, excellent. Very good. Excellent. Gavaldik. Very good. Excellent question. So the truth is that unless you could figure out a way medically to get grain, a piece of bread, into an IV, so it's probably not going to be a relevant question, because you only bench if you have lechem. So I guess I don't think we've reached that point. But the shayla of the IVs, the Mechatz Chinuch raises it. He doesn't talk about IVs, he lived before IVs, but he raises the shayla, what if you could pull off a stunt of having hanos me'ayim without hanos garum? What would the din be? So he says that he doesn't think it would be chayav in Yom Kippur. Even the fishy tasa that he's mechadesh, that you need hanos me'ayim, you need achila ad hanos me'ayim. If hanos me'ayim l'chud is not enough. So that would be a real shayla. That's a shayla for feeding tubes. That person wants the food through a feeding tube so am I correct that fish? It doesn't go anywhere near the goron, right? It goes basically directly into the lachik me'ayim. So according to the Mechatz Chinuch, assuming that most probably the person on the feeding tube is probably pekuch nefesh anyway. But let's leave that out for a minute. So one can argue that, let's say you want to put tray for food into a tray for the stuff they're putting in the tray for argument's sake. So that probably wouldn't be a problem because that's not a ma'is achila b'chlal. So I was thinking about the mitzvah of Sudas Purim. So what's the nature of the mitzvah of Sudas Purim? Chazal Misachin and Megillah says you have to make a Sudas Purim. So what's the pshat? Is Sudas Purim a mitzvah achila? It's like matzah. You have to eat, it's not like eating matzah, or no, it's not the pshat, it's not like matzah. The mitzvah of Sudas Purim is to enable you to reach the point of simcha. It doesn't say in the Megillah to eat. It doesn't say, lasas sam yimei achila. It says yimei mishtim simcha. So simcha, the Gemara says, means have a suda. So simcha is the name of the game. The name of the game is not achila. The name of the game is simcha. So if you have an achila she'ein ba simcha, so maybe that wouldn't be good enough. So if a person ate, even though they may have experienced the ma'is achila, but they didn't experience the simcha sayom yet, they may not be at the state of experiencing for the rest of the day. That's another story. But in terms of that particular ma'is achila was, but a ma'is simcha wouldn't be. It's like Moshe Madav Adoma, the Moshe Shtermach raises the shayla. When we speak about simcha's yom tov, by extension, simcha's Purim, so we say ein simcha ella b'basar, ein simcha ella b'ayin, different shiur of different statements that Chazal make and the Rambam makes, Shulchan Aruch makes. So how much of that do you have to have? How much basa do you have to eat in order to fulfill simcha on Yom Tov or Purim? So we usually think it's a kazayis. That's, that's the usually mindset. Kazayis is always the shiur. So Shlomo says, he's not saying there's another shiur. He's just saying he doesn't know. He says, like, mechadeis is kazayis. That's svarik work, ben l'kul, ben l'chumra. Let's say I have less than a kazayis. I'm very happy. I'm watching my cholesterol a little bit. I take a small hot dog. Take a mini hot dog. So maybe that's also good. Or maybe no. Maybe a kazayis is not enough. Maybe you have to have a za'a steak in order to be simcha. Once you take it out of the realm of achila, then the sky's the limit. Right? I don't know. I'm not sure what the shiur is. So I don't think most people did. I'm very lit for shapur. The guy's sitting now and measuring this piece of meat. Is it chazanish kazayis? The suffix different kabbalah, different torah dumb. You have to, the shabur says by deraisis, you have to machu with big kazayisim. There are more than, you can make a little kazayisim, it's basar, deraisis dumb. Okay, very, very long. Even I don't do this. The forms that sit around and measure sign the kazayis matzah, it's not. So at least we have one possible similarity in the world of Lomdus and Halacha between Yom Kippur, at least according to Mechasinach, and perhaps the Mitzvah Siddhas Purim. There's another possible similarity. So up until now we just spoke about the Nasim part of Purim, now we talk about the Niskarim part. Megillah says Niskarim and Nasim. So Niskarim refers to Kriyas and Megillah, and Nasim refers to the Achila, the Mitzvah Sayyom. So what does it mean in Niskarim? You have to read the Megillah. So there is a famous statement that the Gemara has in Maseches Megillah, that if a person reads part of the Megillah about that, so he would be, I'd say, even if part of the Megillah, even if the words of Mamash are not there, so you have a Megillah, it's missing a couple of words, a couple of letters here and there, so Nishkefelach, he can be covered them out there. So the Mordechai in, it's a good place for this Shaila to be, the Mordechai in Maseches Megillah raises the Shaila. He says, wait a second, how in the world can you read those words about that? Isn't that a problem? Isn't that a problem? Dvar Shevichsav, yet that Rosh Hashanah won't be out there. We spoke about this in the Shul Shir a couple of months ago. Isn't that a violation of Dvar Shevichsav? Dvarim Shevichsav, things that we spoke about, it was in Kol Bokhar also, we had this back a while ago. Dvarim Shevichsav, yet that Rosh Hashanah won't be out there. Things that are in the text, things that are part of the Chumash, you're not allowed to read be out there. That's what they psukim be out there. So the Mordechai raised the question, how in the world could you say these words? These psukim, half the Megillah is missing. Why isn't that a violation of Dvarim Shevichsav, yet that Rosh Hashanah won't be out there? So there is a big machlekes whether that question was even justified in the first place. There is a machlekes 2 days in Taisvis whether this issue applies only to Chumash or whether it applies to Nevim or Ksuvim as well. So Megillah says it's not Chumash, it's in Ksuvim. So according to some Rishonim, according to one day in Taisvis, Maseches Tevurah, we wouldn't have asked the cash in the first place. But the Mordechai was also from the Balei Taisvis. He's asking, based on Taisvis and Baba Kama, of Gimel, where Taisvis is assuming that the issue applies even to Tanakh, even to Nevim or Ksuvim. So he's bothered with the cash. How can you read the answer to Megillah be up there? So the Mordechai writes that the start of the answer is that the person wasn't really planning on reading a Baal Peh. He's really trying to read a Megillah. And he stopped, and he realizes all of a sudden there's a letter missing, there's a word missing, a pasuk missing, like that. So no, it's not the end of the world, he says. It's a Nishkefel. Do the evidence, okay. What does that mean? If there's an Issa, if this is an Issa, so it's an Issa. If the Gemara learns out from Sukkim, Tvarim, Shem, Chassav, Yitra, Rosh, Shem, Baal Peh. So what do you mean it's okay because you're stuck with its perm? So just look the other way. What do those words mean? What's the pshat in that answer? So it seems clear that the Mordechai is assuming that this Yisra, Dvarim Shem Basav, is not an Yisra Deraisa. It's not clear whether the Gemara does listen to that from Psukim, but it's not clear whether this is just an Asmach to Yahweh. There's a real bona fide Torah prohibition to say Psukim by heart. It's not so posh that that's even true. So the Mordechai, by giving you this kula and Uchus Megillah, is probably assuming that the Yisra is not Deraisa in the first place. That's the Mordechai says, L'shitaso, even in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah, if you realize that you're missing a word here and there, so the Mordechai says that you can just finish up those words till you get to a place you can do it. And you can say those words in the Alpes. Nishkef, not the end of the world, even the Chumash itself, because the whole Isser is all in Midrabban anyway. What led Rishonim to say this? How did Rishonim know that this Isser is all in Midrabban? What's the source for this idea that this Isser of reading Devarim Shebechsav Alpes is all in Midrabban? So the source is from Yom Kippur. The source is from the Sugya in the 7th Berakha Masechet Yuma. But the Mishnah tells us that when the Kohen Gadol would lane, you would think this is like the highest laning of the year. The Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur was laning, Mamish, Tavayda. So the Gemara says it was a very, very, there was a Gabbai problem. The problem was that you have two Sefer Torah, and one person is getting both Aliyahs, he's doing everything, and you're not supposed to make a new bracha, the Shabbat bracha, and you're not supposed to roll the same Sefer Torah, because it's a Tirchah Tzibur. So they were in a pickle. They couldn't figure out the Beis HaMikdash what to do. You know, we sometimes think that Yom Kippur the Beis HaMikdash, I mean, we should rightfully so. Yom Kippur the Beis HaMikdash was, Aliyah, Aliyah, Kaidish, Kadosh, that's all true. But there were logistical problems even in the Beis Hamikdash. There were any gabbai and any shul president and anyone who's involved in the logistics of Yom Kippur will greatly appreciate that sometimes there are real practical problems that have to make sure that even the Beis Hamikdash things had to go smooth. That's what I always quote from the Mishnah says in Yuma that it was too cold, so they had to heat up the mikvah and Yom Kippur for the Kohen Gadol. You would think it's Yom Kippur, Gadol, it's a Kedush, but the mice is still cold. At the end of the day, the Kohen Gadol is cold. So when people complain that the air conditioning is too high, too low, so there's a good precedent for the Beis Hamikdash. You should also complain it was too hot, it was too cold. The kachas, even in Yom Kippur, people have to be comfortable. So the...
There's a problem that existed in Beis Hamikdash.
Yeah, see, it's a good old problem. Okay. It doesn't say in the Beis Hamikdash they ran out of babysitters. That doesn't say, but the stuff
they have the tent.
That's right, the tent. That was the Beis Chonio. That was the rival Beis Hamikdash next door. I once said that there's an Ibn Ezra that says has a suffix with the mitzvah of Hakel. So it says that you have to bring. It says that v'gerach Hashem b'sharecha. So you're supposed to bring the gerer to Hakel. So the Ibn Ezra is not sure who are the Geirim exactly. So usually we think the Geirim are the Jewish Geirim. It means the person's mom is Jewish. So sometimes in Chumash the word Geirim means get said. That's something that's a Ger Taisha, but you have to always tell from context. So here it's not 100% clear. So the Ibn Ezra suggests that maybe you have to bring even the Geirim Taisha. They're not Jewish. They're not Jewish anyway. So they're coming to the Beis Hamikdash for Hakel. Again, others disagree with that, but it's a suffix, the Shah of Ibn Ezra. So what's the shayla? Why should you have to bring the Geri Tosha, not bring the Geri Tosha? So the Ramban has a suffix. When it says that Hakel, you have to bring Tapcha. You have to bring the Taf also. So if you say Noshim and Taf. The Taf and Noshim Yom Echad. How old are these Taf? So the Ramban has a suffix. He's not sure. Are the Taf Mamish infants? The kid was born last week and you're ready to bring him to the Beis Hamikdash for Hakel? Or now he has to understand a little bit. Means he's not quite a Gil Chinuch, but he still will get something out of the experience, a mashu out of the experience. He's mamish, a little teeny baby. He's going to get nothing. So the simple read of the Gemara, it sounds like even the teeny babies have to come, because the Gemara says, Taf lamavoyim. What are you bringing the Taf for? So the Gemara doesn't say, because he'll experience something. The Gemara says, Kedei lasis chalav v'yayim. It sounds like the kid's 2 weeks old. He's mamish going to remember nothing, and still there's an inyan to come. So it's a shout out to Sofik in the Rabban, whether you bring mamish infants to the Beis Hamikdash. So I thought that these two sveik, there's a little problem there, these two things are totally zebazet. If you hold that you have to bring mamish infants, so you have to bring the babysitters also. So you have to bring the ger. Who's babysitting? So the Jewish women, they want to come and hear the Divrei Torah. You have to bring the non-Jewish babysitters, the Geirut Taisha. You have to be able to watch the kids. If you hold that, you're not bringing the little babies. You're bringing the five-year-olds. So the five-year-olds will run around the basement. They'll make noise by themselves. No one's going to watch them anyway. So that lost the thing. Okay, anyway, getting back to that story. So the Mishnah says in Yuma that it was difficult in Yom Kippur to figure out how to run the lane of the Kohen Gadol, because it was a big problem with the second Sefer Torah. You had a lane the Mafter, you had a lane from Pashas Pinchas, and that was a whole logistical problem how to figure out in terms of the brachas, roll the Sefer Torah, etc. So the Mishnah says Chazal threw their hands up and says, you know what? Let them just lay in the Be'al Peh. We'll just say it a couple of only a few psukim anyway. So Asal Chadash Israel, we'll just say it 3-4 psukim Be'al Peh and finish call of the day. So the Rishonim on the spot, which says Yeshonim on the bottom of the Gemara, asks the Kasha, he says, what do you mean you're going to say it about Peh? What happened to the Yisro, the Varm Shem Chassav, the Varm Shem Chassav, so the Yeshonim says, you see, for me, the whole thing is the Rabbanon. It's only when you're able to, it's Shazan Chachim, you're really stuck, so then you're allowed to read things about Peh as well. So that's a big Kiddush, but other Rishonim have different answers to that problem in the Gemara Masechus Yuma. But one of the sources for the Mordechai, Masechus Megillah, who maintains that the reason why you can read a Megillah, which is missing a couple of words, because it's only the Rabbanon anyway, so that may have its roots back in Masechus as well. So far we found a potential nafkamina ladina, we're still in the word of lomnus, from the world of Yom Kippur in terms of the Echila, in terms of the Suda, now in terms of Kriyas HaMigdol. But there's something now, we enter into the world of almost Halacha and Machshava, more into the world of Machshava now. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Pesachim, in the sixth parak, that there's Machlekes HaTanoim between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, how one is supposed to celebrate Yom Tov. Is Yom Tov supposed to be Chatzi Lechem and Chatzi Lashem, a little bit of eating, a little bit of learning, davening, or is it, no, you pick whatever you want to do. You want to be a completely Ruchnius person, you can sit and learn all day, you want to eat all day, because Sunday you can have a barbecue all day, either one, stomach stuff, davening, no country of the laws, you don't sit and learn all day, you can sit and eat all day, either one. So we pass like Rabbi Yeshua, they have to do both, because it says, Atzeres Lashem Lechem, it says Atzeres Tiyah Lechem, so you have to have a little combination of both. That's how we pass in Halacha. The Gemara says in Pesachim that even according to Rabbi Eliezer, there are certain days that you have to eat. You can't take the attitude, I'm just going to sit and learn all day, sit and say Tilam Davin all day. You have to have a Suda. Even Rabbi Eliezer concedes you must have a Suda on the following days. So the Gemara rattles off a whole series of different days. So one of the days is Shavuos. The Gemara says you have to make a Suda on Shavuos because Hakol Moldim Be'atzeres Tabina Nami Lachem. Why Yom Shini Tayli Yisrael? because Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, so that's, you have to have a sugya. No shalva. So a lot of darshanim talk about. Hopefully, we spoke about this many times. We get close to Shavuot, so we'll talk about it again. One would have thought the opposite. One would have thought Yom Shnit El Yisrael would have been a day to learn, not to eat. So there's a good, a lot of lochas there to root into that kasha. But the Gemara says that Kabbalah Sator is a mechayiv of a suda. And then the Gemara rattles off and says that Erev Yom Kippur, you also have to have a suda, even according to Eliezer. And on Purim, you have to have a suda, even according to Eliezer. 3 days, then you went to Shabbos also. So 3 days on the calendar, the Gemara singles out that are absolutely not negotiable sudas. One is Shavuos, one is Erev Yom Kippur, and one is Purim. What's the common denominator between these three sudas? So many of the Mefarshim already highlight the fact that the Gemara already gave us the answer. The Gemara says, Yom Shnit El Yisrael, when there's a Kabbalah Satorah cannot be done without a suda. You have to celebrate Kabbalah Satorah. Why do you have to celebrate Kabbalah Satorah? So the Ksav Sofer writes that, that if you don't celebrate Kabbalah Satorah, and he says that if you don't share that simcha with others, you don't give Shalach Manas to others, so it shows that you're miserable about the Kabbalah Satorah. It shows that, oh yeah, I just got the Torah Nebuch. If you celebrate, and forget, more important, you share that simcha with others, that's the whole Yisod of Mishloach Manos, is to highlight the fact that the Kabbalah Satorah is B'tarach Simcha. So each one of these days, during the course of the year, highlighted different Kabbalah Satorah, because there were three Kabbalah Satorahs in the history of Klal Yisrael. There was Shavuos, that was the first one, that didn't succeed. And they have Luchashnias was presented on Yom Kippur. So we should have had a big Suda on Yom Kippur. It's hard to do that because the Torah says not supposed to. So the Torah says that you have a Suda before Yom Kippur. The Suda of Yom Kippur is a Suda of Kabbalah Satorah. That's what they're ready, Mefarshim really say such an idea. That's to highlight the fact that the Kabbalah Satorah is B'tech Simcha. And the third of the Kabbalah Satorah is Purim. Because the Gemara tells us, Hada Kiblu B'mechash Verish. Now we sometimes think that Purim is a great happy day because of the great Nisim that happened. That's all true. But the Suda is perhaps more linked, or at least partially linked, to Kabbalah Satorah. That the Suda's Purim is a celebration of Kabbalah Satorah because Klal Yisrael will read the Kabbalah Satorah again on Shavuos. That's why many quote the practice, the Shemur quotes a minute, on the Pasuk, Yehuda Baisa Oyer V'Simcha, that one is supposed to learn a little bit before the Suda. You have to sit down and learn a little something before the Suda, because L'Kayim, this idea that Suda's Purim is a Suda, main Kabbalah Satorah, it's like Shavuos. Okay, so you don't learn the whole night, you don't learn whatever, but you learn a little bit, has to be a little bit of a Limud HaTorah on Purim. There's a Gevaldik, this meeting that we started a couple of years ago, there's a Gevaldik way to fulfill this. I still have reverberating in my ears. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Rabbi Gifter Zatzal, who said it was the first Daf Yomi Siyum that I ever went to. I was 17 years old, and it was, just to give you an idea of where Klai Yisrael, where Daf Yomi has come over the years, it was in what used to be called the Old Felt Forum. I don't know if anyone even remembers what the Old Felt Forum was. Anyone over the age of 30? Felt Forum? It's the now I think it's called the theater at the Garden, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't the Garden, it wasn't the main arena where the circus is. It's not such a big place. It held a couple of thousand people, I don't think it was much. And they had a couple of people standing out in the street. And that was, whoa, that was like, that blew everybody away. I was looking recently at some pictures that had all the Daf Yomi Siyumim and over the years in America. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, like one of the early ones was in like in the Young Israel Bar Park or something. That was like back in the 1950s. That was like the, and they were like so excited. There were like 300 people there. That was the Daf Yomi Siyumim. But so I remember going to that, and I couldn't get in. I never could get in. I remember standing outside and heard the speakers. And I think it was Rabbi Gifter. Many of the speakers were in Yiddish, but if I'm not mistaken, he spoke in English. And I remember hearing the following words, that one of the greatnesses of Daf Yomi is that it forces you to learn on every day of the year, even the days where it's almost impossible to learn. So I remember the days that he said that almost impossible to learn. So remember he said, Tisha B'Av, you have to finagle to do the Daf after Tisha B'Av is over something. Well, like I usually do two Erev Tisha B'Av. Or he said, Yom Kippur, you got to figure out time to sneak in the Daf. Erev Pesach. And he said Purim. He said Daf Yomi Four doesn't stop for Purim either. So we have to forces you to learn. It's not such an easy daf today. Also with the achos hakadol, achos haktana, you know, sheep having sisters and mothers, and a very complicated.
Just get toshav though.
What?
I mean, just get toshav.
Get toshav in
the
Adam.
Gershav Sharach, the Gerb Nesina.
Oh yeah, I didn't finish it. Anyway, so get back to the story. So this Purim is a beautiful, wonderful celebration of Kabbalah Satorah, but I think that maybe one could go a little bit further and maybe connect it, and maybe we can enter a little bit of a different realm. You know, we did a little halacha, a little lumdus, a little machshava, maybe one step further. The mitzvah of Simcha, we find it so many times, Yom Tov, and Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaSheni, The famous word from the Rav. Rav said that simcha is always that experience of lifnei Hashem. A person realizes that they're in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so that's a tremendous source of joy. That's the mechayev of ecstasy and joy, being in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So we enter into the presence, into the realm of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, in a physical sense, we grow a lila regel. We enter it in a spiritual sense as well. And comes Rosh Hashanah, and comes Yom Kippur, there's also mitzvah simcha. The pashas in the Mishnah is that Yom Kippur is mafsik avelus. How's it mafsik avelus? Because it's simcha, it's a yom simcha. What is the simcha of Yom Kippur? There's no alila regel, there's no achilas b'sar kabanas, there's no basa, there's no yayin. All the trappings of simcha that we're used to doesn't exist on Yom Kippur. What is it about Yom Kippur that makes it, in a certain sense, l'hoy yom tov l'Yisrael? It's almost in the highest sense of simcha. So the Rav explained that the starting point of every human being is a tremendous closeness to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the Shoma, our souls come from mamish from next to the Kisya Kavod, mamish from the holiest, we're coming from the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we enter into this world, and we start off an unbelievable closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And something goes wrong along the way, that somehow, somewhere, we lose our way, we lose our path, we lose our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't find, and we're in this world X amount of years, and we can't find HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does that happen? And the answer is, that when a person is chote, so a chait has consequences. And one of the consequences of chait is that it brings about a distance between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Ram elaborates in the Chushuva. When a person is chose b'tshuva, so you begin to break down those barriers. And all of a sudden those fences begin to break down. And there's almost a reacquainting, there's a reconnecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And all of a sudden you realize that there's a tremendous, tremendous sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's simcha. That's why a person is filled with such joy. That's why the Kippur is over, so the baskal comes out from Shemayim. Lecha chol b'simcha lachmecha. You should eat and enjoy. That's why Sukkot, the whole Simcha Sukkot, it comes on the heels of Yom Kippur, because there's a reconnecting with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The person is once again with Hashem once the chatoim are over. No doubt that in the years leading up to the Neis of Purim, there was a tremendous sense of a richuk from a Kodesh Baruch Hu on so many different levels. The distance from a Kodesh Baruch Hu was practically, you could feel it, you could touch it. There was a geographic distance. Here the Jews are sitting in Persia. So they always, when you get to that Pesach Shehaglom Yerushalayim, you're like a krech, it's like an eichad, like a niggin, the minig is. That you realize, what are we doing here? What are you doing in Persia? What in the world is Mordechai and Esther doing in Shushan Abira? We don't belong here. Kodesh Baruch Hu is nowhere near here. The Shechin is crying hundreds and thousands of miles away in Yerushalayim. There's no Beis HaMikdash. And even the beginnings of the Beis HaMikdash, that they thought they were going to start rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash again, the plans were stopped, and they were stopped again. And according to Achashverosh, the Cheshbon, the 70 years were over. There are probably some people in Klai Yisrael who also believe the 70 years were over. And the whole thing is never going to happen again. The whole Beis HaMikdash, the whole Lifnei Hashem, the whole close to the Kodesh Baruch Hu is just not going to happen. And to such an extent that the Chazal tell us that in the days following the Churban Beis Rishon, so many people came to Yecheskel HaNavi in Bavel, in Golos, and they said to him, it's over, Judaism, we don't have to keep mitzvahs anymore. What are you mitzvahs for? He said, because Baruch Hu doesn't want us anymore. We're out of Eretz Yisrael, no Beis HaMikdash. Well, you can imagine, we live in a world, we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash never for 2,000 years, so you get used to everything. But if you grow up and you live for 400 plus years with a Beis HaMikdash, 400 years before it with a Mishkan, so the only thing Klai Yisrael knew was the Beis HaMikdash. They only knew was that connection to Baruch Hu. They only knew Eretz Yisrael. They didn't know what anything else was. And now they find themselves in Persia, in a Croatian culture, a culture of Achashverosh and parties and everything that stood for. It's over. There's no connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu anymore. And as the events began to unfold, and they saw that not only is their relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu seems to be ended, but now Klai Yisrael themselves are over. Klai Yisrael could be annihilated, and they realized that we're talking right, and Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't care about it. The bris is over. That it's over. The game's over. That there's nothing left between us and the Kodesh Baruch Hu anymore. And that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't need us anymore. He has other plans in this world. And therefore, we're going to be annihilated. We're going to be exterminated. There's going to be nothing left of the Jewish people. And it will fit into the picture. This is what should happen at the time of Golos and Churban. And all of a sudden, there was a turnaround. All of a sudden, overnight, all of a sudden, a turnaround. The course of almost one night, second night Pesach, all of a sudden, the tide has turned. And things are starting to change. And wait a second. Kodesh Baruch Hu is here. Kodesh Baruch Hu is watching, Kodesh Baruch Hu is smiling, Kodesh Baruch Hu is looking down at us in Golos, in Churban, Kodesh Baruch Hu is looking down at us, and He still cares about us, and He saves us. The simcha that emanated, it wasn't just the simcha that they were saved physically. The simcha of knowing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is looking down at Klal Yisrael again and cares about us. That's an unbelievable, unbelievable simcha. So I'll close with, you know, there one akuda, there are many similarities, you know, many almost like comparisons and contrasts between Tisha B'Av and Purim. And we highlight this. The Minhag Yisrael highlights it time and time and again. It's like we can never get too tired of highlighting every time we could stick in any time there's a word Eicha, there's a this, there's a that. Any time we could stick in the word the Nigin of Eicha to the Megillah, we do it to highlight the fact that even during the time of Galus, a great Churban, Hashem Baruch Hu still watching over us. So I'll share with you something I thought that Mamash came to me last night in the middle of Chagiga Yeshiva. It was dancing. And all the Tamidim were down, the Hashem was beautiful. And I'm looking at all the boys in the strange costumes and everything. And you know, as I'm looking at all the faces, trying to recognize who's the Mashiach, and trying to figure out who's what and what's what. And as I remember, the poskim say there are more rites, that Haster Astir, there's a minik, they dressed up and put on masks, to highlight the fact that it almost looked like Kadosh Baruch Hu wasn't watching anymore. And yet behind the mask, you look carefully enough, you'll find the Kadosh Baruch Hu behind the mask, so to speak. So all of a sudden the music switched tunes and they started to sing Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, oh yeah, Zisha, okay, Zisha, whatever his name is. So so those who were in the shul earlier in the year, so I made mention of a very inspiring Baruch Hashem song that happened to me in the summertime, and all of a sudden I realized that the circle was complete. So some of you may remember that it was Motzoi Tisha B'Av. We were walking back from Kosovo, walking back to the buses, to back to Kolo, and there was some fellow who was, a couple of guys were playing on the guitars right by Shayafo, and they were singing Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, and all of a sudden you have 200 guys from Kolo jumping up and down, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. That was the end of Tisha B'Av. Baruch Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu is still here. That was Acharei Kiklos Kol, Kadosh Baruch Hu is still here. So I remember I told us at the beginning of the year that I was standing next to Rabbi Tversky, and I would always love to, if I could ever get in to understand what Rabbi Tversky is thinking at any given moment, that would be very kedai. And he was standing there and watching and staring, and I imagine he was probably having the similar thoughts that I was having, that it's like Kadosh Baruch Hu is mamish watching, he's orchestrating everything. Jews are standing in front of Shvarah Shayafo on in the middle of the night on a Motzoi Tisha B'Av. You have to sit on the floor for 24 hours, jumping and singing Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. But Kadosh Baruch Hu is still watching. Kadosh Baruch Hu still cares. Kadosh Baruch Hu is still there, very, very much there. We don't understand it. There's a mask. What some things that appear in Shayafo now are a mask to what's there. But Kadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is still there. So when I heard that Baruch Hashem last night, so then I realized that's Mamash L'Shitasi. That the same words that you have to commemorate, the same words you have to dance through, in a sense, but it's like Tisha B'Av, are the same words that you sing in Purim. That's still Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem is still there. So I guess we can finish with a niggin. What's the niggin? Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, na 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 na, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem.